Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
Well, this one from Martin. This might take a while, so put your feet up because there's a lot going on in this question. What did Fenerbahce's protest during the Turkish Super Cup final actually achieve, Andy? You might want to give us a bit of the background.
Yeah, so the Super Cup final, which was postponed in the first place, having been displaced to Saudi Arabia between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, couldn't happen there because the Saudi authorities said that they couldn't wear T-shirts with the image of Kemal Mustafa Atatürk on it. And the founder of Secular Turkey. You would have thought they'd check these cultural touchstones before they went. Anyway, so that didn't happen. That was postponed with a couple of hours before kickoff. So then this happened, and this game was a casualty of the way the TFF, the Turkish Federation, has dealt, or according to Fenerbahce, not dealt with the fallout of their players being attacked when they played away at Trabzonspor a couple of weeks ago. Now, they're very, very unhappy about this, Fenerbahce. And so in protest, what they did is they set up to forfeit the game. And so the Super Cup starts. They put out their under-19 team. Mauro Icardi scores after 1 minute. And then Fenerbahce withdraw, and that's that. Now, after that, the Galatasaray players and their under-19s have a sort of kick around to give the fans who've come some sort of entertainment. But I think the aftermath underlines why it's so difficult to see not just a quick resolution, but a resolution of this, because clubs are so incredibly self-interested. You could say this in a number of leagues, but we're talking about something that's absolutely fundamental about sporting justice and about the ability of a league to run here. Now, you know, this is not the first time that you've had protagonists being attacked on the pitch in Turkish football this season. And Fenerbahce put out a long statement afterwards, saying, you know, that they can't carry on in this way. Turkish football can't carry on in this way. They've already talked about the possibility of going and playing elsewhere in Europe. Now, that is way off, by the way. I mean, that doesn't seem imminent or anything like that.
Or likely.
It's clear that they're at the end of their tether with the TFF, which is not just because of this situation, but a number of other things as well. But the way that the two teams reacted to me, so you have this long statement from Ali Koç, who is the president of Fenerbahce and one of the most powerful men in Turkey, comes out and talks about it afterwards. And whereas I have some sympathy for the fact that they don't really feel that like Trabzonspor are furious, by the way, about the length of ban they have from having fans in their stadium. So they're talking about they feel persecuted, and they're not really talking about how players were attacked by fans coming on the pitch. They've not talked about that at all. They've tried to bat it back to Fenerbahce. Ali Koç talks in his statement about, our under-19s came incredibly close to winning the Super Cup. Well, it didn't. I walked off after 90 seconds.
Of course.
It's just completely full of factual inaccuracies. And then you've got Galatasaray celebrating winning the Super Cup against a team that only turned up for 90 seconds. So, like, the levels of self-interest at every point in this, when you had the attack in Ankara on the referee going back a couple of months, it felt like everyone being jolted into place, as if this can't continue. We need to really change the way we look at football, the way we behave in football. And it's like everyone's just had collective amnesia and forgot all of that. And we're back away from common aims and just into self-interest. And that is incredibly dispiriting.
And forgive me, David, I know you're nodding and you want to come in this. Just a quick question, Andy. Why is the Turkish Football Federation in the midst of this? Why are they getting the jip, at least from Fenerbahce, saying that they can't continue with, I'm presuming, the TFF in charge of football?
Yeah, because they feel that they haven't dealt with it. Now, of course, this isn't the first attack on Fenerbahce on the way from going back at Rizespor a couple of years ago. Their bus was attacked. The driver narrowly avoided being killed, which obviously would have killed everyone else on the bus, the team as well. A number of disciplinary decisions, like loads of different stuff. And like I said, for a lot of that, including the safety of the players, I have an enormous amount of sympathy for this. But it does tend to be that I think all the clubs contribute to this. And again, this is not just a Turkey thing. It's just the most extreme manifestation of it. The fact that social media accounts belonging to the clubs, so like their official channels, just spend ages like getting stuck into referees and talking about how it's all a big conspiracy. How does that resolve anything?
It doesn't. It only inflames it further, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
It does. It stokes everything up completely, you know, way more. We know it. Fans are like on social media now.
But that's the fans. That shouldn't be the clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
The question is, does a protest like this achieve anything ultimately, David? A protest from the club?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it does. But they feel they have. I think you're in that window where you feel, oh, we have to do something. What do we do? I think they want to be seen to be doing something. Because if they just stand by and not do anything, then they're going to cop it either way, basically. Mm. Protest or not protest. And that's the issue. So they felt that this was the best way to go about
it. Is it the best way? Because, I mean, for one thing, you've laid all your cards on the table. You can't roll back from accusing the TFF of being culpable in all of this and then suddenly accept whatever, you know, way forward that there might be.
Well, of course, there is an argument that it's a relatively safe way of doing it, isn't it? Because it's the Super Cup. Whereas if you look at, if you're a Fenerbahce player, for example, you don't want, and any player actually, you don't want your sporting efforts messed with. And they are on the cusp of a potentially historical season. We talked about it before, the title race in Turkey between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce. The numbers are historic. They're amazing. They could walk out of this season, Fenerbahce, with the Super League and 100 plus points. Now, of course, they could get 100 plus points and not win the league. That's the sort of pace that's being kept. And a European trophy. They could win the Conference League as well. So, you know, I think that's something you don't want to mess with in your protest, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to distract what's going on in the field.
Here's a question from Joe. What will Thomas Tuchel's next step be after leaving Bayern? Do you want to go with that first, David?
It's an interesting one because I think this Champions League tie against Arsenal is very much an audition for him personally. Obviously, he wants to get Bayern there. I know he's leaving. And he obviously wants Bayern to get to the final. But I think on a personal level as well, he's still got things to prove. I think people, you know, want to see what he can still do. And so much is made of his character, this abrasive character that rubs everyone up the wrong way, that has these demands and such, which is all part of his personality. I think him being like that as well probably gets an extra something from himself as well. It, you know, it motivates him. And Diego Costa used to play, I always used to say he needs to have a bit of a, get into a tete-a-tete with a centre-back, really get the best out of him.
It's true, though.
Yeah, it is.
It was true for him.
Some people are wired that way.
Yeah.
And I think Tuchel is wired that way, so he needs this little bit of confrontation just to get the juices flowing. In terms of his next step, I think he'd absolutely love to come back to the Premier League. Just so happens there might be a few jobs available, including a very big one in Manchester, and then also...
Not the one in Liverpool, though.
No, not the one in Liverpool. Okay. I don't think the one. I don't think the one in Liverpool.
Liverpool and Manchester are very close in distance. I'm just checking.
Oh yeah, exactly. And maybe his old haunt in West London as well.
No, not returning there. You don't ever. Well,
there are still a lot of Chelsea fans who really like.
Next thing I was going to say, I think people overlook that aspect. If you look when Tuchel was there, and everything happened with the fallout with Abramovich coming out of the club and what have you, I think Chelsea fans were really impressed and really grew to love Tuchel more in terms of how he handled himself around all that and galvanised everybody.
But what about the owners?
I mean, that's another question. Yeah, I was going to say they've got their own, there's some new owners now and they've got their own plans and what have you. But
And they're the ones that gave him the P45, weren't they? The new owners?
Indeed. So there might be a bit of pride for him to swallow in terms of it, but he never wanted to leave, did he not?
I think that's the question really for Tuchel, because there aren't a lot of elite landing spots at the moment.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
I think it would be over-egging it to say he's a serial burner of bridges. I don't think he's quite that yet. But it's difficult to think of like a modern elite-level coach who has such an aura of perceived toxicity around him. And I think that's a bit of an issue. Because branding is everything, isn't it, really? Now, I think he's a very, very good coach. But we don't really talk about that much. And I think that is a huge issue for him. Now, I've heard a lot of people say recently, well, maybe it would be better for him to, like, you know, step back a level. You know, take a slightly below-tier job. But if you're him, you're like... Why would I do that?
Why would he? I've
succeeded. I got PSG to the Champions League final.
What happens if he?
I kept Neymar in line. I won the Champions League with a Chelsea team that were absolutely hopeless at the halfway point of the season. And also, I think if anyone who knows anything about Bayern, he's not been great there by any stretch of the imagination. But what's happening at the moment and what's happened over the last years, he's been set up to fail. Like, not much of it is his fault. Some of it is his fault, of course. But I think the way that he relates to people has been particularly under the microscope. But on the other hand...
And his critique of people.
Yes.
Isn't it? Critique of
players.
Yes,
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I think, you know, you have to bear in mind there are a lot of precious little egos that the higher you get up the game, which... makes him being there a little bit anachronistic, however he good he is as a coach. But I think when you look at that, the fact is that all Bayern's major problems, so defensive weakness, poor recruitment, Kimmich and Goretzka not developing into this world-class midfield that they should have done, all of those things, like, you can't pin any of them on Tuchel, really. Now, could the atmosphere have been better there this season? Yeah, probably. As he sat there and said, well, there aren't any solutions. Yeah, and a coach at that sort of club should never say that. But that's what he is. He's frank. Probably every other Bayern coach over the last couple of years has wanted to say that, but he's the guy who actually says that.
If Sir Jim Ratcliffe is listening to this, Tuchel's just shot up his list, I think.
Of course he's listening to this.
And he sold Tuchel very, very well there.
Yeah.
And there's one more thing. What happens if he orchestrates a victory over Arsenal, a potential Premier League winner, and one of the brightest young coaches in the world in Mikel Arteta? What happens if he can go into any job interview and put that on the desk and say, oh, which are the candidates coming in with that, by the way?
Yeah,
so I noticed you stopped short of win the Champions League. Although, that what an incredible end to his time at Bayern that would be.
Yeah.
Which is, I wouldn't say it's likely, but it's not impossible, is it?
So, Jim, you heard it here first.
I don't think he really takes advice off me.
So, Jim Ratcliffe?
Yeah, if
he
is.
Are you kidding?
If he is, stop fracking.
Right. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, we're talking of politics. Yeah, this question from Billy. I've had politics, or is this just commercialism? I've read that FIFA could be removing legislation that currently blocks leagues from playing matches overseas. Is there a realistic possibility of European League matches being played abroad? Well, you can go ka-ching, 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 because they've seen the model from the NFL playing matches overseas.
And yeah, the NBA, yeah.
Yeah, and doing really well with that, not just in terms of spectators, but in terms of interest for the media as well.
And I think you're right to say that, because as David knows much better than me as well, the cultural crossover with American sports and football, soccer, has never been greater. And I'm not just talking about like outside the field, but inside the field. You look at the players, you know, and that's something that the NFL, for example, really leans into. You look at when you had the Kansas City Chiefs playing at Frankfurt earlier this season. It was Frankfurt, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And you had Antoine Griezmann and Koke going over together, meeting Patrick Mahomes, watching the game, all this sort of stuff. And so the players who, I think this is a slightly different topic, but they are reaching some sort of boiling point about the level of voice that they have in the game. And I think particularly when you look at the load on players, it's clear that players are talking about, right, hang on, like we need to take ownership of the way the sport is going. Now, if you're running the sport, what do?
You're trying to resist that, aren't you, if you're running the sport?
Yeah, but the way you resist that is by throwing them a little bone, isn't it? So like by giving them a little bit of what they want, by saying, we understand your cultural touch points. And as well as that, you're kind of killing two birds with one stone, aren't you? Because at the same time, you're getting to expand to these other markets. Now, I've just come back from the US, where they had this massive like Premier League fan rally in Nashville there at the weekend. And I think other leagues would love to do that. Of course, other leagues like La Liga, Serie A in particular, to a lesser extent, the Bundesliga, who are already fairly global, they all want to copy the best bits of the Premier League. Why? To make money, of course. So I think...
And the Premier League arguably wants to copy the best bits of American top sport, elite
sport. Of course. But imagine if you're the Bundesliga, well, not the Bundesliga, I think culturally that's impossible because of the fan culture there. But imagine if you're La Liga or Serie A, imagine you can beat the Premier League to the punch and have a regular season game abroad.
Yeah, there's going to be a race to it, and it is inevitable ultimately. It's just the nature of things. They're always wanting to take bits, the best bits of each sport now. I think NFL's really led the way when it comes to taking games abroad, especially in the UK. Every game sells out. And also, by the way, they've been sending rubbish teams over for years, but it still sells out. And that just goes to show the level of interest and the level of growth that has happened. And it's funny, I was out with a few weeks ago the head of MLB Europe, and obviously baseball games have been coming to London as well. And they touched on very much the same thing. And they said, oh, we have seen what export have done and got wrong, but we've also seen what export have done and got right. We're going to make sure to take that bit, but not that bit. And it's a nice learning curve for us. So they're all these sports are looking at each other and saying, oh, I'm quite liking that idea and what they're doing, and bringing that out there and not doing that. So they're all learning each time and they're all looking to expand. And look, when it comes to FIFA, when it comes to football, they are always looking at where the next book is coming from. That's that. Let's not beat around the bush here. It's all about money. Where can we get extra money from? Oh, we drained that part of the game. That well is still quite full. Let's go and drain that one.
I mean, my question is, if you're UEFA, when we talked about tipping points for players in terms of travelling and physical load and stuff, if you're UEFA, do you encourage this to like move closer to killing off the expansion of the Club World Cup going forward?
It might be. And you know what? This happens again in NFL quite a lot. In terms of the players, they have the player agreements at the end of the season.
Yeah. Like the collective bargaining?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they say, we don't like this rule in our game, and we don't like that we're doing this, and we don't like we're doing that. Oh, but we've really enjoyed doing that this year. So the players will come and put several things on the table. And then the league will also put several things on the table and say, I know you don't really want to do this, but if you do this, we'll let you keep that and that.
Quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to happen, I think, eventually. And players, and it leads into what Andy's just said, and there's a lot of footballers starting to get more outspoken. I think Rafael Varane has been very outspoken, I'd say, if you look back in the past year and what he's talked about in terms of the number of games, and then also recently with concussion as well.
It's a lot of the French players, actually, because when we talk about player load, Griezmann and Mbappe have talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
Using parallels with American sports.
Exactly. And look, there's few players in football who are more interested in American sports than Griezmann. He's really, really locked into it. So he's seen that as well. And it is. It's inevitable. Changes are going to have to happen as well.
So this question from JK, what's the most impressive story or narrative, if you prefer, by a club, a player, a manager that has gone under the radar this season? Gosh, who wants to start?
You're going to vote Sunderland? You're going to vote Sunderland?
Yeah, of course.
Go on, then.
Sunderland, Sunderland legend, Sunderland icon, Eric Rae. He's doing an incredible job at Brest. He was barely at Sunderland. Yes, he was here for a very, very short and sweet stay, but he was lovely. Couldn't really keep up with the pace of the Premier League, but he was a lovely technical character. And I seem to remember a very nice assist in a 4-1 win over Chelsea. So, yes. Great stuff as a player. Love him.
So let me repeat the question to you so that you just keep it abreast of what the listener wants to ask. What's the most impressive story, narrative by a club, player, manager, etc. that's gone under the radar?
What's the most impressive thing he did 20 years ago?
So many people turning off right now, especially the honorary Geordie next to me and Andy Brassel. Eric Wright at Brest. Astonishing. Comes in with them in the relegation zone. Not only that, he hadn't had a job in 12 years. And he comes waltzing in, currently second in the league, in Ligue 1 as it stands. Quite a remarkable job what he's done.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. And, you know, we sort of briefly touched on it when we were doing a Game of the Week on the main show. Like, they're just so coherent. They're more coherent than any other team in Ligue 1 at the moment. So they signed Wael on this short-term deal towards the end of last season to keep him up as a sort of, you know, a life vest. And then he agrees to stay. And they've got, 14th, 15th budget in the division, maybe not even that much. And yet, they're so well drilled, so well organised. The football is actually quite ambitious as well. It's great to watch. There are a load of players in that team. And like, if they do end up qualifying for the Champions League, then goodness knows what team they'll be able to be put out in it, because there are a lot of big clubs who want those players. And obviously people look at Martin Satriano, who is on loan from Inter, and I think will probably end up never playing a single game for Inter. But I think the big ones there, Pierre Lismelou, who never really quite worked out in England, but has been brilliant there this season. And a lot of people are calling for him to be added to the French squad. bear in mind the midfielders that France has, by the way, and people are calling for him to be called into the French squad. Lilian Brassier, who was coveted by Porto and Milan in the window as well. There are a lot of good players in that team, but they're good players because they've been authentically coached.
I think if anybody wants to see them as well, if you get on YouTube and look at the highlights against Metz from the weekend, just this ultra-offensive, expansive football, and it was an absolute joy to watch. I think it was about 70 minutes or so of it, and they were unbelievable the way they played.
I'd like a quick little honorary mention for Fabian Hürzler as well at St. Pauli. He's doing a brilliant job, really, because it's similar, I suppose, to Eric Weah, but at the different end of his career, because Timo Schulz, who is now in charge of Köln, he was fired as St. Pauli manager last season with them in relegation trouble. And Hürzler came in, got them up, like not just away from relegation trouble, they won like 10, 11 games in a row at one point last season, and got them towards the promotion spots, though not quite there in the end. And he's continued that this season. Again, not with a big budget. And they're top of the league. They're looking in great nick to be promoted. It would be a real surprise if they weren't promoted at this point, St. Pauli. Of course, haven't been in the top flight in the Bundesliga for over a decade. The most remarkable thing about Hürzler is he's 31. 31. Born in Houston, Texas, to continue the US theme of this, if you like. And he had time in the B team at Bayern and Hoffenheim when he was a kid. A little bit like a Thomas Tuchel or a Julian Nagelsmann, retired pretty early. But I think you look at some of the size of some of those clubs in the second tier. So obviously Schalke, we keep going back to them, bit of a mess, but you know, they get 60,000 people in every week. Look at Hamburg, St. Pauli city rivals, still struggling to make the playoffs, even under their new coach, Steffen Baumgart. Talking of Köln coaches, Fortuna Dusseldorf, there are some big clubs in there, and St. Pauli have been impeccable all season. And Hürzler's one to watch.
31.
Born in 1993.
You don't win anything with kids.
Fortunately, he's not playing.
This is from James. Why does it hurt me as well, Noel, by the way? If you think it hurts you, imagine me. From James, why does it seem like every team in Europe sings the Alley Alley song? Where did it originate from and which club probably shouldn't sing it? Well, I've done a lot of research on this Alley Alley Alley, as I call it. It's Alley Alley Alley, isn't it? But what research have you done on it, David? Where's it come from and which club probably shouldn't sing it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about clubs in a minute, but where it actually originated, where it did start, is Eurovision, an Italian entry in 1985. The song translated is called Summer Is Ending. And it became a huge hit in Italy. It was then popularized on terraces of smaller Italian teams. I've seen a lot about Triestina. They took it to their terraces. Napoli heard it. So Napoli really popularized it in Italy. And then, as with most things in football, I think if you look at the way football culture is for fans, they end up taking a lot from different fan groups that they end up seeing abroad or what have you. We've obviously seen Man City take the Poznan as well when they had their trips out in Italy. Their trips out in Europe. And then, funnily enough, it made its way over to Portugal. And Porto fans, it became their song. They changed a few of the lyrics, obviously made it a Porto song.
And they love an LA in their songs, Porto.
And there you go. And then Liverpool fans obviously faced Porto a few years ago in the Champions League. It was 2018, 2019 when they met in the Champions League, I want to say. Mm. And Liverpool fans heard that and they were like, we're having that. And then it obviously got popularised later on in Liverpool's Champions League run to the final, of course. So that's how it's kind of been passed through and passed over.
It's
so
a great journey. It's not a great story.
Yeah,
it's
not Liverpool's song, but it also wasn't Porto's song and it wasn't Napoli's song as well. It was just something that is gradually progressed through time, and I think a nice story behind it.
It's interesting, isn't it, that as you say, that cultural exchange that as global football
organic
supporters.
Organic as
well. Yes, exactly. Much. As global football supporters, there's far more we've got in common than we don't have in common. I think we can overlook that at times, and it's important not to. But I was discussing this on the Ramble earlier in the week, the fact that on Ramble Uncut, the fact that Belinda Carlisle's having her moment at the moment. On terraces. Yeah, heaven is a place on earth.
Yes.
In N17, that's Kulusevski is the best on earth. I saw a man with no shirt on standing on a table singing that in a bar about 20 steps from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium a couple of months ago.
I've just had the Rangers Lundstrom version, which is also very
good. Oh, decent, nice. Decent.
So
but the thing is, I suspect, I might be wrong here, but because travelling to games in Europe is so much easier. So if your team's in Europe, then great. For the vast majority of us who support teams who never get into Europe, well, if you want to go with your mates to Hamburg or Porto or Lisbon or wherever else, you know, you do it. It's cheaper than a flight from London. A flight from London to Lisbon most times is cheaper than a train from London to Manchester.
And you can usually get there quicker than a train from London to Manchester.
But very, very, sometimes. Very, very possibly. But I think people have broader horizons and the world is smaller now. And so I think you hear that. So like, as I was saying, Heaven is a Place on Earth has been sung to mainly say not particularly nice things about Timo Werner on the terraces in Germany for a very, very long time. So I think people hear stuff in different contexts as well. You know, they may be away for a weekend with their mates and think, you know what, I'll have that. I'm going to impress everyone when I get home.
Yeah. Yeah, European travel is a key for this. It was so funny. I was having it's kind of on the same lines as this. I was having a discussion with somebody about Stone Island and why do all football fans wear it? Why it's become a thing and CP company as well. And they were like, oh, this random British brand. And I'm like, it's not British. It's Italian. It's from Milan. And they were like, how did it become a thing? And I said, it was football fans going over in your 70s and your 80s. And they were seeing CP company, Stone Island, Sergio Tacchini as well. And they were bringing these items back. And they were then wearing them on the terraces in England. And they were like, where did you get that? I've never seen that.
Yeah.
I've never seen that down the high street. What are you on about? And that's how it picked up. And it's another thing that's similar to the song. It comes over through football culture.
It was Lacoste at one point, and obviously classic was Fred Perry. But remember, the other part of this question is, which teams probably shouldn't sing it? Go on,
That's a tough one.
We've had Napoli, we've had Liverpool.
Well, I guess as Porto popularized
Porto.
It, maybe not Benfica.
Yeah.
Maybe not Boavista.
Okay.
Yeah.
So none of the teams that currently sing it.
But the fact is, as I've said at the beginning, we're all a lot more alike than we like to admit.
We're all in it together.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for listening to Ask OTC. If you'd like to ask a question, you can contact us at any time at Radio Dawson, at Andy Brassel, at David Jacker, or at OTC Pod. And you can email us, otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.